Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute. Today, Bob and I are joined by a real champion in the cannabis industry, the Chief Marketing Officer of Viola Brands, Erica Pittman. Erica, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I know we've been trying to get you on for a while, and it's I think the stars finally aligned, and we feel really honored to be able to speak with you, because we know you bring so much knowledge and understanding to the cannabis industry, and especially in your role at Viola Brands. But what we want to really make sure we highlight for our listeners is your personal journey, because we know you've had such an interesting career and you've touched so many different sectors and gained so much marketing knowledge through all of those experiences. And if you would, tell us a little bit about your path into the cannabis industry, what you did before, and what made you so passionate to take the position that you did in the last 12 months with Viola Brands.
Sure. So my path is a little serendipitous into cannabis, which I think a lot of people that sort of don't come from the black, now gray market into the white space, I think, are coming from very unique backgrounds. For me, I was in media and consumer packaged goods for the bulk of my career for the past 24 years. And I've worked in the magazine space for about 15 years, where I sold advertising, ultimately becoming a sales executive for some famed magazines like Glamour magazine or even Vibe magazine, and a few other Time Inc. publications and Condé Nast books. But I shifted into marketing about, call it 12 years ago now, and I started working for a company called Combs Enterprises, which is Sean P. Diddy Combs's parent company, where I was an integral part of a significant number of brands within his portfolio, including the really successful vodka, Ciroc, ultra premium vodka, and De Leon tequila, but also helped launch his television network Revolt and relaunch his Sean John children's and women's lines, as well as his water company. And so I've had a lot of experience from a strategy and operations standpoint on some very successful businesses within that portfolio. But throughout that time, I was always very, very interested in the burgeoning trends in economy and gross domestic product, quite frankly, in the United States. And for a few years, I thought it was going to be natural energy. It seemed like that was the next big wave after technology from a financial standpoint. But when I thought about how much oil plays a larger role into the economy globally, I realized that alternative energy sources is a little bit further down the road than we'd like to think. And suddenly I started to lean towards cannabis. And I've been watching cannabis, honestly, since the late 90s, just thinking about how the plant is recognized or had been recognized at the time in this country. Growing up in New York, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I saw the war on drugs firsthand as a child of the 80s, and just what it did to destroy a lot of communities that looked like the one that I grew up in. And I thought it was really interesting the role that marijuana played within that dynamic. And what intrigued me was the notion of cannabis being used as an alternative resource for cancer treatment and cancer patients who are dealing with chemotherapy and some of the side effects associated with that. And the way that the government began to allow patients to engage cannabis, but at the same time, people that I saw every day were being arrested and convicted for felonies associated with the same plant that was being used to help terminally ill patients through chemotherapy. And some patients, thank God, that were able to beat cancer. So it was really intriguing to me. I'm like, is it a bad thing or is it a good thing? You know, and I think, you know, obviously all things in moderation. We could say the same thing about opioids, right? They're used to manage pain, and with the right usage, they're effective. But, you know, abuse can be, you know, detrimental. But nonetheless, the notion around when, where, and how to use cannabis, even as early as the 90s, is always intriguing to me. And so I've watched it peripherally, I'd say, for the last 20 years. And I think once cannabis became legal in Colorado, I was increasingly intrigued, but without having a ton of access to education and knowledge around the legal market, you know, my mind's eye believed if I didn't move to Colorado and open up a dispensary, there was really no way for me to get into the industry. And obviously that was, you know, 15 years ago, call it give or take, you know, 2 to 5 years. But even fast forward today, I think people are still struggling with understanding the industry, you know, where the opportunities are, and just educating themselves at large around the plant, the usage of the plant, and the, you know, the recreational versus medicinal attributes of the plant. But nonetheless, still watching it very closely, never being a consumer myself at the time, just trying to understand what it all meant and how it plays into the larger scale of economics and, you know, what's next for the big industries in America. I received a call from a now colleague at Viola to have a discussion around the strategy that Al has created around the brand. And quite honestly, had never really heard of Viola before. I was thoroughly impressed with the work that the brand had done to date, particularly around the brand ethos. The brand is named after Al's grandmother, Viola, who suffered with glaucoma and arthritis and a number of other debilitating diseases and illnesses as she's continuing to age. And Al discovered the efficacy of the plant because of his grandmother's pain and trying to find a solution for that pain. And after vaping, quite frankly, she had a huge response from a glaucoma standpoint she was able to see. And where she had a lot of blurred vision prior to that. And I think for Al, it was sort of like, wow, I've really got to dig in deep and figure out, you know, what's really happening with this plant. And that's what started his journey, you know, call it over 12 years ago now. Since then, you know, Al has become the number one African-American license holder of all multi-state operations. He has the largest African-American-owned multi-state operation in the country and arguably the world. And that's a tremendous statement. And I think it speaks to his passion for the plant, but more importantly, his passion for the purpose around why he started this business. It was to help people. It was to help people from a, you know, physical standpoint, and it was to help people, particularly people of color, black and brown people, figure out their space and how to generate generational wealth within a category that, quite frankly, has never really been in favor of them. 81% of the ownership of cannabis category is non-black or Latinx. It's white. 5% is Latinx, and less than 4%, give or take, is African American or black. And you know, disproportionately, the number of African Americans and Latinx felony convictions for marijuana is, I would arguably say, the exact opposite. There are more African Americans and Latinos being arrested and convicted of nonviolent felonies around cannabis than there are white people for the same crime. So there's a disproportionate story here happening, which is unfortunately the story of America. It is a story that has been told time and time again as industries burgeon and opportunities grow from a financial standpoint. And I think what Al has been able to do and what he's continuing to do was really, really provocative for me. And it gave me even more incentive to want to participate and help to expand the story around this phenomenal product, this amazing brand and brand story, and the amazing goal and vision he has for black and brown people in the category.
No, it's very well said, Erica, and thank you for that history. I definitely want to talk about your perceptions of the cannabis marketplace, and to your point, what does it mean, and why is it so difficult for people to understand? But before we get there, just for the benefit of I think Eric and my own personal edification, would love to know a little bit about put us in your shoes a little bit when you join Combs Enterprises. What's it like to move into that scene with those kind of people that are just so well connected and entrepreneurial minded and just you know, connected to just a lot of really, really cool and interesting people around the world. Take us through that journey. I know you hit some of the highlights as to what you accomplished, and I want you to use that as a backdrop, if you would. But you know, when you walk in on day one, how does that unfold for you?
Well, ironically enough, I am of the culture, so a lot of the people that Combs Enterprises sort of engaged with, not all of the people, obviously, Sean, P. Diddy, Combs, I couldn't possibly have the same Rolodex that he has, but a great deal of the constituency, I think, that intermingled with Combs Enterprises, I had predisposed access to prior to coming into that environment, both professionally and personally. So for me, it wasn't a tremendous leap to move into the Combs Enterprises world, if you will. Again, I sold advertising for lifestyle magazines, very, very big lifestyle magazines. So I had access and tap into influence and culture and celebrity for over a decade or so. So I was quite comfortable in the environment. But what I can say is the thing that was unique and impressive for me, and I think really sharpened my sword, if you will, was Sean Combs's intricate involvement in the strategy and the build out and the rollout of his businesses. His companies are successful by his hand and by his design. Certainly there are a group of really talented individuals around him that forward the machine, myself included. But I think that his vision for what he wants to create and produce is so innovative and so authentically committed. He works tirelessly to make something out of nothing. So learning the skill set around the speed with which Sean creates and the level of detail and dedication he has to creating excellence around the things that he creates was a new environment for me. I came from fairly corporate structures, working in larger publishing firms prior to coming to Combs Enterprises, which arguably at the time, me working there was a $900 million portfolio, but nonetheless, it was still wholly owned by its founder. So technically, it was a privately held company, and a lot of the process and procedure came out of evolution from startup to where I think they are today. So adjusting to the level of speed, the level of excellence, and the level of creativity that Sean possesses innately was probably the biggest hurdle above and beyond sort of, you know, meeting global leaders and moving at light speed to create trend and culture.
So I want to use that word culture and sort of dive into that for a moment to get your perspective, because as we think about the cannabis industry, you talk about being part of the culture with your Combs Enterprises and your career spanning to that point. Now, what is the cannabis industry culture? And I think this is part of the reason why people have such a hard time understanding what it is, what it means. They struggle to get their mind around it. Now, let me give you a couple of examples. There have been larger law firms that have tried to acquire our law firm. And you always end up getting down the road to the executive team. And the executive team tends to be some senior attorneys that, you know, oftentimes are in their, you know, 65, 67 plus years old. And when you get to that point, their understanding of the cannabis industry is, you know, literally, it's been said to me, so it's Snoop Dogg, right? So we're talking about Snoop Dogg.
And to good for Snoop Dogg.
Right, good for Snoop Dogg, exactly. But you know, my point, though, is...
It's also Willie Nelson.
Well, so that's my question to you. So, I when you look at it, it's Willie Nelson. It's Snoop Dogg. It's medicine. It's recreational. It's a job creator. It's an economic driver. It's a government revenue source. It's the grateful.
It's a gross domestic product.
Yes. What is the culture of the cannabis industry?
Oh, that's a really broad question. And I think I might be able to do a dissertation on that, to be completely transparent. I mean, you know, the thing about it is, and this is what's so amazing about the category, is that it is the culture of cannabis is so broad and it is expanding, honestly. When you think about these, you know, these sort of connoisseurs, or they're calling them cannoisseurs, right? So these cannabis experts, people that have been, you know, indulging in cannabis for decades. And then you think about how the legalization process is ever evolving and ever changing almost on an hourly basis in this country. It is changing the dynamic of what the audience looks like, what the engagement points look like, and what the overall culture of the category looks like, right? And so if you're talking about the medicinal side of the category, culturally, there's a very different experience. People are using CBD, which is also cannabis, right? Cannabis is THC and CBD. CBD is legal, THC is not. So how do you utilize CBD And the culture around that is very, very different from how you use THC and the culture around that portion of the category. When and where and how you use it varies depending on CBD versus THC. Is it topical? Is it a tincture? Is it a vape? Is it a concentrate? Is it a flower? There are all different ways to engage in it. Is it an edible to indulge the category? So the culture of cannabis could be cuisine and could be culinary. The culture of cannabis could be arts and culture. So visual arts and musical arts and all different types of creative processes, which very many people, you know, engage cannabis when they're creating. Cannabis is honestly part of the sports culture and fitness culture. When you think about CBD products that are used for muscle pain and, you know, and pain relief. So, you know, Al Harrington has had several knee surgeries, and he started a company called Replay under his Harrington Wellness umbrella, which is a CBD topical cream that he utilized to help with his pain management because he did not want to take opioids and he didn't want to become addicted to painkillers or opioids. And so he used CBD as an alternative option for pain management. So there's a culture around that. So when we talk about what is the culture of cannabis, it's almost anything you want it to be. Innovation is starting to figure out ways to use the waste of the plant for eco-industrial options. So like flooring and cleaning products. They're trying to figure out other ways to recycle the plant to utilize it in other areas of everyday life. So I honestly do not have a direct answer to what is cannabis, but I think the exciting part is cannabis is evolving into just about anything we want it to be, and certainly rivaling some of their its competitors in the industry. When you think about basic categories around sports, arts and culture, charity, music, those are the four pillars that we focus on. But even fashion, the culture of cannabis has become a fashion statement. It's a very, very unique and exciting category.
I think that's a fabulous answer. And really what you kind of highlighted, and going back to what you were saying at the beginning around how you were looking at alternative energy or alternative resources, there is an opportunity, I think, with industrial hemp, another part of the cannabis plant, where we're going to see an entirely new commodity come to fruition that fits into so many different parts of our world and different natural resources as an alternative resource. But I want to ask you this, because it kind of, when you said at the beginning, I hadn't thought about it, and it makes a lot of sense. You said that Al Harrington may very well be the biggest figure in the world who is a person of color that owns a cannabis company. And it makes me
a multi-state operation, certainly, yes.
Right, and it makes me think about something we saw just earlier this month, which is the NFL Players Association sent out a letter to the agents in the NFL and said, we don't want NFL players to support or endorse CBD companies. And you think about the advertisements. I think with your background in advertising, I'm really interested in your thoughts on this, because you think about the advertisements you see on TV that players in the NFL or NBA might be in. It's a car commercial, it's a Doritos commercial, etc. And how do you feel seeing the NFL Players Association coming out and saying, do not endorse CBD products? That's not something that we support. I know there was pushback initially, but does that irk you at all?
You know, it doesn't irk me. I coming from the spirits industry, working, on Ciroc and De Leon Tequila for 10 years, I am intricately familiar with prohibition in the United States of America as it relates to spirits and wine and beer. And I think that we are a country of precedence, right? Our biggest and oldest contract is the Constitution, and we build everything around that. And you guys as lawyers know that all too well. But, you know, we are a country of precedence. And when we look at history as an indicator and how this country evolved throughout the prohibition process, I mean, you have to think about it in context. The prohibition was 88 years ago. It wasn't even a lifetime ago. And so, you know, 89 years ago or 90 years ago, it was completely taboo to engage alcohol. Now you can't watch a television program without someone pouring a glass of bourbon, or, you know, the way that, that alcohol is now socialized in everyday life, I think is radically different than it was 8 decades ago or 9 decades ago. And so looking at the past as an indicator, I think the same thing is happening with cannabis. People are very afraid. People are afraid of what they don't know. It is still federally illegal, although 33 states are medicinal participants, 11 states are recreational and counting. But still, federally, there are certain things that you just cannot do around this product that may be okay in certain counties and municipalities. And so I think when you look at institutions like the NFL or the NBA or the, you know, Major League Baseball institution, they have to be prudent about how they adhere to law and guidelines. And when you start to make concessions in an environment that straddles the line of you know, illegal, you have to sort of draw a line in the sand as a leader to say, you know, either this is right or this is wrong. Now, whether or not I'm on, you know, either side of that line is subject to a different conversation, but I think I do understand where some of the stringent ruling is coming in around this subject matter. And the good news is I think over the next 12 to 24 months, that is going to change radically. I do not believe that the Fed can continue to hold off on the inevitable around legalizing cannabis. I do believe that it is a matter of how to legalize it in a way that is responsible, that is regulated, quite frankly, that is taxable so that these municipalities can benefit from it. I do believe a lot of it is revenue driven. And I think I think bigger than that, they want to understand how this particular industry is going to cannibalize other industries, right? And then what is the financial impact on those things? And so I just think there's a broader conversation at a federal level that still needs to be worked out. And once it does, obviously all of these things will go away. So it's frustrating, but, you know, it's par for the course. And I think, who knows, in 6 months, they may sing a different tune around it.
Well, it is something that is just, it's remarkable that the federal government does not pay closer attention to it, but it's also a sign of the times and just the contentious nature of every single political issue out there. But it's going to become increasingly relevant when you have our neighbors to the north, as our Canadian friends, and our neighbors to the south in Mexico, with soon to be enacted domestic distribution of adult use cannabis legislation. That is going to put a lot of pressure, whether from a policy standpoint or not. Hopefully it prevails upon policymakers in Washington, D.C., no matter what their political affiliation, that they got to keep up with the Joneses. And if they're not keeping up with our neighbors to the north and to the south, they're missing a tremendous opportunity or continuing to miss that. Now, we're coming up here towards the end of this, and I just wanted to ask you, 2020 has been a crazy year for so many different things. We're faced with a pandemic. There's been, you know, heightened social and racial tension across this country that we haven't seen in a long, long time. In so many young people's lifetimes, they've never seen anything like this. The cannabis industry continues to move forward. It continues to more than survive, but not quite thrive, but somewhere closer to thrive. How the heck do you plan for 2021? What does 2021 hold for Viola? Because as we plan, and so many of our clients plan what 2021 is going to hold, how can you be certain what it's even going to look like in 2021, given what's happened to date?
Yes, well, I am no soothsayer, and I don't have a crystal ball. So I am pivoting just like the rest of the world and literally taking it day by day. My team and I have been very agile and very flexible and just open to, you know, whatever comes next. We are dealing with a number of different unthinkable crises right now in this country and around the world. The good news is we're not experiencing this alone. The entire world is going through the same thing with this global pandemic. And so as we continue to, you know, pivot, evolve, and innovate, the rest of the world is sort of operating in the same cadence. So the pandemic has forced us all to slow down, to rethink about how we engage, to rethink experience, what a face-to-face, touch-to-touch experience look like. What do things look like in terms of engagement? How are we defining engagement? How are we converting people from awareness to adoption? And so I think that the strategies that have been tried and true for years and years and years prior have needed to evolve. Cannabis being one of the actual products that has a tremendous amount of experiential elemental factors. So people commune over cannabis, right? Groups of people get together around cannabis. It's almost like alcohol and drinking. It's a social interaction. And so figuring out how you do that with shelter in place rules in place, it makes it a little bit challenging. But one of the things that I instituted very, very early on when I got to really know Al and understand the brand and where he wants to take the brand, our product is driven on three principles. And it's, you know, it's plant first. So a premium product, it's purpose, which is the DNA of why we're doing this, and it's people, which is the lifestyle element of what we're doing. And so as long as we continue to develop programming and communication around those three pillars, we'll always have a story to tell. So my role in 2021 is to really lean into our purpose-driven work, which is all rooted in education, entrepreneurship, expungement, and incubation, and really forwarding the progress of equitable opportunity for Black people in cannabis. So we will continue to do that, you know, shelter in place or not. And I think innovation from the standpoint of figuring out ways to expand our portfolio. We just recently launched in Washington State yesterday. We're very, very excited about that. We have some new news coming down the pike in the next few weeks. So we have zero intention of stopping. I just think the way that we communicate with our consumer has to change to be more relevant for today. And what that looks like in 2021, I don't know. You got to call me in January. I may have a new perspective for you. Let's get through the inauguration, and then we can figure out how we roll out 2021.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we would love to have you on again, Erica, because it's been really informative and educational and fun to talk to you and get your perspective on these things. And for any of our listeners who want to learn more about you, we know you published a book in February of this year. It's called What Mommy Never Told You, A Woman's Guide to the Next Phase of Life. That is available on Amazon. You can also find more information at ericapittman.com and more information about Viola and all of the wonderful products that you guys have at violabrands.com. But it really has been just wonderful to speak to you today. And we thank you for hanging in there with us, finally getting some time to connect with you. We can't wait to have you on again.
I'd love to come back. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.